Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to WFHR's Playmakers. Good Monday afternoon, Wisconsin. Hope everybody's having a good afternoon out there, too. Got your host, James, here, joined by Randy Paul.
Good afternoon, James, and everyone else.
Good to have you with us, man.
Yeah, it's good to
great
be here.
Way. This is a real Monday when we got you with us. This is a real Monday. Appreciate everybody being here. Just a real quick lap. That's the first time I got the timing on that intro, the new intro, right.
That was
the
good.
First time.
That was good.
You can't say anything until afterwards, though.
Right.
That's how a no-hitter goes. You can't say anything. We will talk a little baseball a little bit later. I want to take some time to talk George Foreman as well with you, Randy. We're also going to cover some local stuff that we have going on. Randy was just recently at the expo that we had Ross on recently to talk about. Want to touch on that. But I cannot resist this opportunity, Randy. I don't know how often this happens or how often it will happen, that back-to-back weeks, we get to congratulate a champion.
Right.
Last week, of course, our Assumption Lady Royals, and a big tip of the hat to them, bringing the gold ball where it belongs, right here back in Wisconsin Rapids. But, of course, we want to start off the show congratulating the Lady Badgers.
Right.
A Wisconsin Women's Badger Team NCAA Women's Hockey title, first in overtime. I keep people complain about March Madness with not being mad. And not the craziness that they want. And apparently every game's supposed to be a buzzer beater and all these different things and stuff. Hockey's got you. What are you worried about? What are you complaining about? Go watch women's hockey.
Did you see that?
The whole tournament's been like this, let alone this game.
Did you see that goal that on that penalty shot that was made by
yes.
Kirsten Sims? Oh, my gosh.
Kirsten Sims can do whatever she wants, as far as I'm concerned. O'Malley and her play. O'Brien's play. Just incredible season for them. One of the greatest hockey seasons you will ever see.
38-1-2.
38-1-2.
Is that insane?
And I feel like it's as is a lot of skew sports, let alone women's sports. They don't get covered nearly as much. I do think Wisconsin does a really good job of this. I'm not talking local. I mean nationally. I think Wisconsin does a great job of covering these things. It's part of the reason the women's team is so great is the coverage and the amount of attention that young ladies see in this sport, and they want to play it.
Yeah.
And thank God they do, because man, I'll tell you, I will never forget that game. Especially that third period.
Yeah, 8 championships now for the Badgers.
8 Ooh, championships.
That's super.
That's a dynasty.
Yeah.
That is just incredible. And a big tip of the hat to them. Thank you for an amazing season. If I'm Ohio State, I don't have my head down.
No.
You lost to the better team. When that happens to me, you can't have your head down, regardless of what happens. And as far as that's concerned, that's one of my questions to Badger fans out there with the NCAA tournament. And how that one ended, and how do you feel? Do you feel you lost to the better team or not? How do you feel about the season? We talked about this on Friday a bit. I don't think anybody had the Badgers even here. Like, maybe in the tournament, maybe in the big dance, but I don't think anybody had them as a number 3 seed or having the season they did, or John Tonji having the season he has. Possibly, if I think the Big Ten player of the year. I want to hear from all of you. Let's go ahead and take to the phones. We got you open. Getting on the show. What's up? What's going on?
What's going on, James?
What's on
that
your mind?
I stick with the women Badgers, the Lady Badgers, and I'm kind of just looking at some stuff here that when they played Ohio State, they were actually 1-1 or 2-1-1.
Oh, okay.
Wisconsin, they played at Ohio State. They won the first game, lost the second one. And then back at it was at Wisconsin, which was at a sold out crowd. The first game was January 2nd. They beat Ohio State 6-0, and then on the 4th, they lost in the a shootout 1-0. So, I mean, so Ohio State and Wisconsin seen each other quite a bit this year. So that was neat to see that the WCHA was well represented in the ladies hockey.
It has to feel extra good, too, to do it against Ohio State. It just it has to feel a little bit better just against that particular team, especially considering they've kind of traded punches in the championship game over the last couple of years, these two teams. But I don't, you know, I talked about this with the River Kings and what was facing them if they did end up facing the Mullets like we saw that they did. And what happens in hockey and in the playoffs when you're playing somebody who is just an elite athlete and just very good at scoring, in particular, in this game of hockey, where it's such a game of angles and luck and so many other things, and skill, obviously. And I don't believe that whatever team Casey O'Brien was on this year, she probably was not going to win a title with the season that she had. 88 points on 26 goals, 62 assists through her first 40 games, just 40 games on the season. Any other athlete pulls it off at any level, and it's just headline news on SportsCenter. Like, that bugs me a little bit. I will say that I am proud of the national, the local coverage, the statewide coverage of this team and this young lady. I am ashamed of Fox and ESPN and the way that they cover women's athletics. Where it's, if it ain't Caitlin Clark, it's got to be low hanging fruit. It's got to be really easy stuff for them, and where they don't have to work too hard to think about it or anything. Thing, because God help them if they have to pull a couple muscles thinking about sports differently for the first time in their lives. This lady pulled off one of the better collegiate seasons, period. I don't care what the sport, I don't care what era, decade you're talking about. It's incredible what she did. And like, and I'll own this too. I haven't talked about it enough. I'll be completely honest. We got three shows a week, and I haven't talked about this team nearly enough. I'll admit that. I feel like we should have given it more attention. I'm sorry that we're doing it so late, but man, did I appreciate that team, because that was a heck of a playoffs.
I do have a little story to tell you, though, that happened over the weekend with O'Brien. Friends of mine on Facebook, they were actually at the game, and they were right behind the goal. And they must have been pretty close, because you can see the puck go in from Sims at the end of the game. They actually had it. They were recording it when they did it. But their daughter, she plays hockey here in Wisconsin Rapids with the club team. She actually had a sign up, and O'Brien actually gave her. And she said that she, you know, at, you know, the, how the checklist is, you know, and they heard their bucket list, and actually she said, in hoping to get a stick from O'Brien, she did it.
That's awesome.
And then the girls actually got pieces of the net too.
I don't know why, but that meant even more to me for some reason. Like, I don't know. That's a really cool idea. I don't know if I've even heard of that. I'm sure it's been a thing, but I haven't heard of that. That's just a really cool story, Matt.
Yeah, if you go on TikTok, you can actually see the Badger women having a piece of the net too. When they must have had a chance to cut them off the goalposts and stuff like that. So that was really cool. And it just, you know, with Sims, I mean, they were talking, I was listening to a little bit of ESPN this morning, they were talking about, they were saying most professional guys can't handle the puck like what Sims did on that penalty shot.
Yes.
Oh, that was a fantastic move, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then, you know, but I guess I'm a little confused, and someone did explain it to me a little bit, but I don't know if you know the rules a little bit better than I do, James, or if you can explain it, why they did hold the penalty shot at the end of the hockey game.
What I read is that a girl from Ohio State, the ball was in the crease, the puck was in the crease, and she put her glove on it or her hand on it.
Yep.
Is that what it was?
Yep, it was so a hand to God situation for soccer fans out there. It was a hand to God situation where this time they called it. This time they didn't allow it and everything. But I've heard some grumblings. I will say that I haven't heard nearly the amount of grumbling out of Ohio State that you normally do in these things, but we're not talking football, so I don't know how much they're paying attention.
Right.
But with that, I think that it's one of those things where it's a pretty clear call. I like referees, swallowing the whistle at the last period of the game, last couple minutes of the quarter, whatever the game is. In this situation, they had to do that. They had to call that. If it was Wisconsin doing it, I'd say the same thing. That's just a clear, you know, kind of knucklehead move, or not knucklehead move, a just not thinking move. You know, that's so much of sports is reaction based, and more times than not, it's for the better. That part just didn't help that young lady there.
I don't know if that, to me, that almost is not, is that truly a knucklehead move? Because if she went to do what she did, the puck was going in, no matter what.
Yeah,
it would have been
fired. Yeah.
But she did, but she went in there and slid in there, tried to stop it. Yeah, obviously it hit her hand, but she could have missed the penalty shot, so it would have been ended up, you know, Ohio State could have won it at 3-2.
How many times in football that a play is going 60 yards down the field and you see the corner, you know, purposely move the, you know, do whatever he can to stop and hold the receiver and take the penalty? I see what you're saying. I feel like in hockey, I don't know. I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. I just don't. I'll say that I do think that one of the things that that she could have done differently, I don't know if she should have done it, to be honest with you. I think he let the goal in. I honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think she could. Yeah, I don't think she did. I don't think she did. Regardless, they won. They won, game over, and congratulations to them. One more time, congratulations to the Assumption Lady Royals. I don't want to keep you too long, and we got some other things to get to, but I did want to wrap up the Badgers men's basketball season and touching on that a little bit. And I think certainly I'll take any, you know, any feedback, any opinions, but I really do hope Badger fans by now, you know, you've had a little bit of time to feel and think about it and everything. I'm not saying right after the game, but by now thinking, you know what, that was a fun season.
Oh, it was a great season, and if you even listen to some of the post-game interview stuff they did with Gard, and Gard said this was probably the most fun he's had in over 30 years on his since he's coached, you know, in coaching. This is one of the most, the team played like a team, and, you know, and then you said earlier about how referees kind of swallow the whistle. You know, there was some grumbling at the end of the game that, you know, Tanjay was fouled, but I agree with the swallowing, because you can't make a, unless it's blatant, you can't make that be the outcome of the game.
I think the only one that kind of bothered me was they said on the technical foul on the bench.
And not explaining it.
Yeah, that he, you know, why not just say what he heard or what happened? Why would you not say why you gave a technical? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, Randy. I mean, that was just, I don't understand that either. But the Badgers, I mean, they didn't shoot very well at the free throw line. They missed 6 free throws, the best shooting free throw team in the league, and you shoot 79%. And it didn't, plus it also didn't help that, you know, BYU shot 46% from the 3-point line where you're sitting shooting 34.
Yeah.
And
they were bombs too. My gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a hot team right now. They are shooting well. They are. One thing about especially having a season like John Tanji's had, it makes me think of this as we're talking about Casey O'Brien and everything. Neither of these kids are locals. Not really even close. They're transplants. They came here to go to the university to, you know, fulfill their careers and their educations. I bring this up in part because I personally focus so much on the pipelines in college athletics and recruiting in college athletics. And now more than ever, it's important and vital to your business. And by that, I mean your university, to be able to recruit and be able to bring these kids in. When you have solid seasons in college sports, winning everything is of course awesome and great, but most people understand, whether it's subconscious or not, only one team gets to do that. So it goes down to, well, what can this team do for me? How can they help me get to the next level? How can they help me and my family in these things? And if you are a fan of Casey O'Brien, if you're a fan of John Tanji, you're seeing these two individuals excel at these places more than they have anywhere else that they've been in their lives. And if you're McIntosh and you're sitting there at the top of the University of Wisconsin, you got to feel pretty good about this. Again, there is no, you can't lose in the recruiting game when it comes to a season like this. I know it didn't go the men's side the way you'd like it to. Certainly did on the women's hockey side. But for every loss, what did you gain? And what they've gained from the national exposure of a Don Tanji and some of these things, or a Casey O'Brien, that's recruiting gold. There's very few universities in the Big Ten that can offer that. Certainly Ohio State, and that's an outlier. That's a difference maker right there. But I'm not even sure that Michigan has some of the pull that Wisconsin does in some regard. They've got a lot of national pundits that kind of push Michigan agendas and talk and that M and everything. But I don't know how respected, and I'm not saying this as an opinion. Look at the recruiting they've done. How many great, who's the last amazing Michigan athlete? You know, certainly, what's his name in Detroit? The defensive, Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson is certainly an all-pro. He might be a Hall of Famer. So there's one.
Right.
But, I mean, there's not too many. And there's certainly not a lot of Michigan natives going to Michigan and becoming the next great athlete. Wisconsin's got a handful that you can talk about. And Casey O'Brien's one of them.
And I also think it's interesting, too, because I think the Badgers were picked to finish 12th in the Big Ten this year, and they ended up getting a third seed. Had they not lost to Penn State, they probably wouldn't have had to go out to Denver, where BYU was right next door, and they could have played in Milwaukee. But just think about that. They went from being to the 12th, you know, picked to be 12th in the conference, ended up being a third seed, and now people are calling still for Greg Gard's head. It boggles my mind.
You know, I will say this. We need to do something on social media where, okay, you want to tweet this certain thing. You have to be able to answer certain questions.
Right.
Like, what do you know about basketball? and what do you know that Greg Gard doesn't?
Yeah.
What do you, I'm even saying this for me, because I get angry. I just don't add the comments. I just don't take that extra step of, like, commenting it online or anything like that. But I'm no different than any other sports fan. I get angry at sometimes that I vent. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I realize, okay, I'm acting like a fool. I don't know anything. These guys are paid to do this for a living.
Are we in the locker room? Are we at all the practices? Do we have the one-on-ones with these kids?
Think before you hit send, man. You're lucky. Any university would be lucky to have half of these coaches, half of these players, and all of that. Kev, we appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
All right, you guys. Have a great night.
You too. 715-424-2600. Just a touch or two away on the Civic Media app. Feel free to call up and join the conversation. Randy, you did some bopping around recently over at the expo that Ross Provost from Burton Eights was joining us talking about.
Yeah, he joined us, 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, to talk a little bit about the upcoming expo. And of course, we had that thrilling two trips over to Green Bay on Friday and Saturday. It was like, well, if we get over there Saturday to the expo, I love going on Saturday because the crowds are huge. But if we don't get there till Sunday, that means we're over at the state tournament. And guess what? We got there Sunday. So that was awesome.
That's awesome.
And so I was talking to Ross a little bit over at the expo, and he said it was larger than ever. Usually when you get into the expo center in the back, they've got maybe a few boats set up back there. But now this year there are booths back there. Also, he said it was the busiest they ever were. And they said that on Saturday. And they have pretty wide aisles. I would say that those aisles are probably 10 to 15 feet wide. They said if you wanted to get from one end to the other in a hurry, good luck, because the crowd just kind of shuffled along. It was just, you know, it was 15 feet wide all the way down the aisle of about, 30 yards maybe.
Nice.
So it was just a packed environment, and they said they just had a great Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday, of course, everything wraps up about 2. So we were there for maybe a couple hours and got a chance to see all of the fun, cool things. So, but he wanted to give us and wanted to say thank you to you for allowing us, for him to come on to the show and share his message about Burton Eights as well as the expo itself. So thought I'd pass that along to you.
As long as I'm in this chair, we'll make time for fishing. We'll make time for Ross, Burton Eights. and it's not just because I like the guy and I like fishing. I believe that even if I didn't have those things, that's my job. We cover local. We know we got a lot of anglers out there, got a lot of people that love fishing. We're at that expo with you. That's what we do around here, is cover these things. There are few people that cover these things better than Randy, Paul, and Michael Comer, and I do believe Michael is joining us right now. Oh, please be Michael.
Well, you know, I was in the middle of buttering some toast, and I was going to buy some minnows and go fishing, but I heard Randy Paul on the radio, and I had to get on the phone.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Real quick, Michael, I do want to shout out Ross Provost and Burton Eights. Find out more at burton8s.com. Be sure to follow them on YouTube as well. Great videos over there. We'll have Ross join us again real soon. And great to hear that the expo was successful, Randy. I appreciate the notes on that one. Michael, how you doing, man?
Doing all right. There's just two things I want to touch on. I want to call before the break. And that was the first one. There's this conspiracy theory out there that that there should have been a technical called at the end of the game when the BYU player did throw down the the jam after the horn. You know, I see both sides of that one because, boy, oh, boy, I know the rules still apply until the officials are off the courts. I remember there's a game Randy and I did the other year that the official waited till after the game to let the, or a coach let waited till after the game to give the official a piece of their mind. And they're in the handshake line, and the official looked at her and gave her the old hook, and she was still escorted off the court before the end of the handshake line. So, you know, I don't know what all is really involved with that, but it was an interesting thing, you know, applying it to what Randy and I have seen over the years. And then the other one was I was able to mark myself safe today from hearing people complain about the Ohio State Buckeyes getting hosed on that penalty shot and then losing in overtime.
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous, that one. You know, I think I could have gone either way on the BYU-Wisconsin game and that call you're talking about right there, or non-call that you're talking about there. I lean towards... Here's my problem, though. I'm rooting for the Badgers. I'm in on the Badgers. At the same time, in a situation like this, I love the idea of the madness. I'm not sure if it's the right call or not, or if it's just me and the lover of storylines and how amazingly insane we could fill the next hour or two of our show talking about that, had they made that call, and what would precede it. Say Wisconsin wins that game. They make that call and Wisconsin wins that game. Like, you want your madness, there you go. Like, that would have been amazing storyline-wise. As far as the rules go, morals go, character of the game, I do think that a lot of that karma catches up with you. I think that if you're BYU or the Connecticut coach, who I never take the time to learn his name, no matter how many titles he wins, because he's just a big baby. guys like that, people like that, I think karma always catches up, whether the refs catch it or not.
You know, it's interesting too. I don't know if you saw the end of the Colorado State Maryland game.
The
freshman makes that layup. Immediately, I said he took three steps. And, you know, they replayed it over and over, and then they finally went back, and they were having the post-game show, and somebody must have said that to them, because all of a sudden they have this on, and then they were talking to Gene Steratore about it, and he was like, well, you know, what is they don't actually count the steps until you've got firm control of the ball, and he was bringing it up to his chest, and maybe it was moving a little bit, and didn't have two hands on it, but he took three ginormous steps with that left hand with that, but same thing, they're not about to call that, you know, because that's what they're looking for, the madness ending.
You just teed me up on one of my biggest pet peeves in all of sports, and when we... So when I'm a kid and I'm learning to play, you know, intramurals, and I'm learning to dribble better and all these things, if I traveled, my coach would stop play and we had to start over and do the whole drill over again, these things. Nowadays, with the Euro, with some of the growth of the Euro step, and I don't mean to put it on him, but he's the biggest name, and you don't get to be the face of the league for nothing. And LeBron James, and the way he just literally crab walks with that ball, instead of the refs in the game of basketball being like, well, we got to catch this. We can't dumb down our sport. We can't do that. They have dumbed down dribbling. Well, they have made one of the simplest things in the universe to dribble a ball somehow even dumber. And I know I'm not supposed to use those words or anything like that. I don't care. They've taken the sport I love and made it dumber by just making, you know what, we're not even going to call it. You know, we're just going to let, you know, I know what we say in rules are traveling, but that's just between us, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, when it's LeBron or somebody like this. That messes, man, that's messed up.
One of the things
that's the exact opposite of what we're supposed to be doing. Not only teaching young people, young athletes, women, men, whoever are playing the game, we're supposed to be making the sport better and evolving it every year. It's instead basketball has gone backwards in some ways.
One of the things somebody once said that they were told by a former NBA official that people are not coming to the games and paying whatever astronomical price they are to watch you call Michael Jordan for traveling.
Yeah.
You just let Michael Jordan.
That's
travel.
Fair. That's fair. Yeah. Speaking of Michaels, Michael, anything else before we go to break?
Just, I guess, the other shoe dropped. I'm sure I don't want to steal Randy's thunder on it, but the other shoe did drop after I left you guys hanging on Wednesday. Yeah, Pat McDonald, longtime Lincoln High School hockey coach, he announced he's retiring effective at the end of the season as well.
Yeah. Had a number of these stories lately. So I appreciate your coverage on it and talking about it, man. And nice work on the in the newsletter again. Appreciate it. Looking forward to talking with you soon.
Yeah, I'll hopefully be in on Wednesday, but I'll let you and Randy go back to buttering toast and catching minnows to go fishing, and I'll see you guys soon.
Have a good one, brother. Michael Kober joining us. He'll be with us on Wednesday. Real quickly, before we do go to break and come back, I don't know if you've got some local notes for us, Randy. I want to take some time to talk a little bit about George Foreman. Got our stat of the show coming up as well. As we wrap up, beginning and ending with women's college hockey, Wisconsin forward Casey O'Brien. For those that didn't hear, I mentioned the season she had. She did also win the 2025 Patty Keitzmer Memorial Award for the top player in women's Division I college hockey. Congratulations to her, and again, on Wisconsin, and congratulations to the Badgers. We'll be back with more show, and we're able to do that thanks to our friends at Family Natural Foods and Quality Plus Printing. Welcome back, everybody. Playmakers, Monday edition of the show. James and Randy hanging out with you. We got plenty more to talk about, and the phone lines are wide open. Hit us in the numbers, 715-424-2600. A big thank you to Family Natural Foods and Quality Plus Printing sponsoring this hour, letting us catch up on local sports with you, Randy. What do you have for us?
Well, the high school boys state basketball championships were held at the Kohl Center in Madison this past Saturday. In Division I, Wisconsin Lutheran, home to Duke's Conknipal, won the title by rallying to defeat Wisconsin Valley Conference champ Marshfield. What a battle that was.
Yeah,
57 to 55. Marshfield was holding on to the lead with about a minute to go and just couldn't put it away.
I really thought they might.
I did too. Man, they played well. The Vikings moved up a division this year after winning it in Division II last year. Landon Lee led the Tigers with 22 points. He had 4 3-pointers in that effort where they came up just a little bit short. But congratulations to Marshfield. Great season for them. Undefeated in conference and getting the silver ball at state. Division II, after defeating Wausau East 75-63 on Friday, Wauwatosa West upset the number one seed, Racine Park 60-57 to claim its first ever state title and its first ever state appearance. From Division III, Milwaukee Academy of Science upset top-seeded Freedom 57-54 to claim their first state championship. Both teams were making their third appearance in Madison. Division II saw Bondwell, winners of the Central Wisconsin East Conference, fall hard to La Crosse Aquinas 74-45. The Blue Golds had defeated Mineral Point, the number one team in Division II in the sectional finals, before blowing out the second-ranked Bears. And in Division V, top-seeded Cochrane Fountain City's top second-seeded Sheboygan Lutheran 60-54. It was the first state championship in two appearances for CFC. Well, beside the Assumption Royals winning the state championship in Division 5 9 days ago, ending with a record of 29-1 as they defeated Barneveld 34-30, they were also had a few of their girls named to the All-State team. Senior Anna Schooley, who finished with 13.9 points per ball game, 5.8 rebounds, and 3.4 steals, was all named to the All-State squad, as was junior Jordan Jaglinski. She averaged 15.1 points per ball game and 45.6% of her three-point attempts. Honorable mention went to Sarah Shaw, who averaged 12 points per game, 5.9 steals per game. And personally, I think she probably should have made the All-State team with those numbers.
Definitely.
Because, of course, you're in good hands with All-State.
No, nicely done. All nice.
Sorry.
That was great.
And by the way, next week on Playmakers, we're hoping that assistant coach Paul Jaglinski will join us at about 5:10 to talk about all of these awesome accomplishments of their team.
By the way,
Assumption's Logan Meistrom also competed in the three-point challenge this past Saturday at the Kohl Center before the championship games. He advanced to the semifinals before being eliminated. He finished in fourth place, so way to go, Logan.
Yeah.
Jordan Jaglinski would have been in the competition. She was the top percentage three-point shooter on the season, but fortunately, she was playing in a state championship game.
A little busy.
Yeah.
She was a little busy.
So she was not able to play in that.
But, I'm guessing Jordan's good with it. I'm guessing, I don't want to speak for the young lady, but I'm guessing she's going right with
that. She spoke for it. She was fine.
Great coverage, as always, Randy. Appreciate it. Thank you so much for that.
We had so much fun in Green Bay last weekend. Wow, that was a blast.
I feel like the stories of the trip, of the experience, are just as amazing. So that's really cool. I'm happy. Great work by you and Michael again. fan. Appreciate the coverage as always. And enjoy the breath while we wait for, what, 2 minutes for the next season to begin and everything. And we've got more summer sports coming up. Michael just sent out an email about some of that and everything. And we're touching on to you, Pam. I heard talking about it a little bit as well. So looking forward to that. I want to take a moment to real quickly get to our stat of the show, but it also leans into talking about someone. And our stat of the show, everybody, is 45. 45. That is how old George Foreman was winning the heavyweight title of in the world. Now, I understand to our younger listeners out there, and I appreciate you guys, the heavyweight boxing in general, let alone the heavyweight title, doesn't mean what it used to. And even by the time my generation came around, it didn't have the punch that it used to. It didn't have the pull that it used to and everything, but it still meant something. And George Foreman winning the heavyweight title at the age of 45, and unfortunately, because he was so good as a salesman, and because of his grill sales and TV interviews and smile and being seen as almost a caricature of George Foreman, I to be fair too, boxing has a long history of, you know, people wondering, hey, is this guy fighting a kangaroo just for show or something like this? So is this all just a bit or what have you? And even if it isn't a bit, people just kind of like, well, that's good for him, and then moving on. We have lost sight of the accomplishment that this man has had. Now, it takes 2 seconds for somebody to bring up LeBron James and what he's doing at his age, or what Alexander Ovechkin is about to do in breaking Wayne Gretzky's record at his age, or even Djokovic in tennis, you know, some of these things. But all of this stuff comes up long before anybody will bring up the fact that George Foreman won the heavyweight title at 45 years old. Anybody over the age of 30 right now, tell me how you're feeling. You got any aches? Got any pains? You got any hurt? And how did you get most of that? Doing nothing. Walking. Living. Breathing. I was shoveling the other day, Randy, and I've got some pain in between my shoulder blades where it hurts whenever I breathe deep. I couldn't survive a fight with my shadow right now. Like, what? And I know how to fight. And I'm an actual, like, I grew up with a boxer as a father. I know how to handle myself. And wouldn't last 2 seconds with my own shadow. This man won the heavyweight title in the world. And not only won it, but won it doing something that nobody ever gave George Foreman credit for. He won it with his brain. Go back and watch that fight. And all you got to do is watch, you know, I'm sure you can find the highlight and everything. But I rewatched it this weekend. And watching it with my dad. And I understand that boxing for most people is just punch harder than the other guy. Nobody that you've ever seen get paid to box did that. Nobody that you've ever seen paid to box. I'm not even talking about winners, great fighters, or anything like that. I'm talking about anybody going out there has ever approached boxing that way. Mike Tyson was one of the smarter athletes you'll ever see. That's something you ain't going to hear anybody else talking about. George Foreman, one of the smarter boxers you would ever see. Michael Moore has got him on age, got him on energy, all of these different things. But George can take a punch. George Foreman could take a punch better than most people could ever take a punch in boxing. And he's taken these punches right to the face. And Michael Moore gets a bit winded. And all you need if you are George Foreman is one opening. And Michael Moore just lets down his left just a little bit. Pop. Just one pop from George Foreman. The camera's not even really there. The announcer doesn't even quite catch it. He's talking about Foreman hopefully being able to, you know, make this a fight and everything. And then boom. And Foreman wins. And the first thing George does is get down on his knees and thank God. Like, go to his corner like a professional, and then he can't help himself. He just collapses. And it's one of the more cool moments I think of in sports. I grew up in an Ali house. I grew up loving boxing. George Foreman was always respected in my house, but I'm not going to act like just because he passed that he was one of the great names and we always talk about him or anything. But I think when somebody passes, one of the honors we have of the living is to remember them as the complete person and see their whole story. We get to do something that few people get to do in life. We get to see the arc of a human being, their complete storyline. And while this guy did something to Joe Louis that nobody on the planet thought could happen, including Howard Cosell, who was calling the match, George Foreman was supposed to earn his bones against Joe Louis. Joe Louis was the man. Nobody was beating Joe. Foreman whooped Joe Louis. He whooped him. That might be the only time you could say that. I know Ali beat Joe Louis. He didn't whoop him. George Foreman, go back and watch that fight. That's not supposed to happen in boxing. And George Foreman went and did it. Long before Mike Tyson, George Foreman was that. Everything that my generation loved about Mike Tyson, George Foreman was already doing it, man. The playbook was already written for Mike. George Foreman went out there and did something that few people could ever do to Joe Louis. And then, 20 years later, went and did it to Michael Moore when nobody thought he could. And among all these things, they pale in comparison to him as a man. Because all I saw people talking about on social media was people raving about George Foreman, the man, and how kind he was, how he'd take extra time to talk to you and hear you out, how he'd be the butt of the Ali jokes. He'd take it so that he could promote the sport of boxing around the world, how he took all of this. He took the punch left and right, in the ring and out of the ring, and did it with a smile. And was the last one laughing, because, man, that grill sold well. And it's so cool to hear not just boxers and athletes talking about George Foreman, but hearing people that I never would have dreamed talking about him and having George Foreman stories, to the point that right before we came back from break, Pam had a George Foreman story. Thank you, Pam. Just an incredible life. And we get so caught up nowadays in, oh, he was the greatest this or the greatest that. I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at a great life.
It was interesting. My grandson was over, and he was looking on his phone, and he says, "Hey, Grandpa, you ever hear of George Foreman?" And I said, "Yeah, he won the gold medal in 1968. And, yeah, he was a great boxer, undefeated until he went up against the rope-a-dope against Muhammad Ali and then lost for the first time there." And same thing, great humanitarian and things. And you're right, though. When you talk about boxing, the younger generation has no idea what boxing was like back in that era. Mm. 1976, we were fortunate enough to go to the Olympics in Montreal. And so we got tickets to the finals.
Oh, my God.
12 out of the 13 boxers were Americans.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think they all won, if I remember right.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it was crazy. And you know,
Look at my goosebumps here, man. I didn't know you got to do it. Oh, my God.
It was the Spinks brothers were boxing there.
Yeah,
Sugar Ray Leonard boxed.
Sugar was there.
I mean, probably about three sections over, after every match, all of a sudden we see this commotion over there. And we realize the boxers are going over there because their families are sitting there.
Oh.
So we go over there, we're getting autographs from these people. So somewhere in my mother's house, there are autographs of these people. But yeah, the era is completely different now. But yeah, George Foreman, you know, again, all those things that you just said, how true they are about him. And unfortunately, I think people, if they think of George Foreman, if they are from an era gone past, probably think of the loss to Muhammad Ali more than the wins that he had.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate part of it, I think.
Yeah.
The loss to Ali, in boxing realms, as far as on paper and records and all that, the loss against Ali is not nearly as significant as the win against Joe Louis or the win against Michael Moore, and yet you're right. And that's a shame, and a shame on the person more than not on George. Not on George. No. That's not on George at all. That's a shame on the person that thinks that. He had 81 fights as a professional, 76 of them, winning 76 of them, and 68 by knockout.
Yeah.
And go back, again, another thing, we all imagine George Foreman as soon as I say his name, older George Foreman.
Yeah.
Go back and look at that man. Oh, my
God.
He
was sculpted.
He was like built in a lab to box. That's that. I mean, more than any other boxer at his time. This is what I'm saying when I'm talking about Mike Tyson and everything. Yeah. That this was him before that. And
he was a bigger, stronger Mike Tyson in his day, right?
Yeah, and just a good person by everything we can tell.
Yep.
Why don't you touch on a couple of other things with you, Randy? Certainly talk some baseball, as we were just days away from opening day, man.
That's crazy.
Awesome. I don't know if anybody else saw this. Did touch on it a little bit last week. The Brewers have settled on their shortstop situation.
Oh.
They're going to be moving Joey Ortiz over to third base. Bryce Terang going to stay at second, it looks like. Who they have at shortstop, I haven't really necessarily heard who's getting
it. Yeah, they were kind of trying Ortiz over there. They had Terang there for a while, but I think he actually came up with a sore arm doing all the trying plays and throwing throwing so often. So I don't think I'd move a Gold Glover off of second base.
No, you can't. It does lead to questions about some of the offseason moves and why you didn't cover this sooner and some of that. And I understand the outcry about some of that. But, you know, when we're talking about this team, money is always going to come up. And I think, like Don Allmeyer said, that Tony Kornheiser quotes all the time, the answers to all your questions is money.
If it wasn't, we'd still have Willie Adames.
Right.
It's just money.
Yeah. I think that you can get you can do a couple of things. You can get bent out of shape about that, or you can see, okay, well, who's going to step up? And I can't do anything about that, but I can certainly, you know, focus on the players and the team and, you know, enjoy the season.
Think about what the management for the Brewers has been able to do with the limited amount of money they have. I mean, basically, they're going to lose Corbin Burns, right?
Yeah.
Because he was in the last year, and they could have got nothing for him. What they get instead? Joey Ortiz. And they got D.L. Hall, who struggles a little bit, but, you know, he's still got a possibility. But, my goodness. And where is Corbin Burns now? Is he in Baltimore?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
He was there 1 year, one and done, and now I'm trying to remember where he went. Arizona, I think.
Yeah, he's in Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. So kudos to the, you know, management.
Absolutely.
And I know they're high on some of those young players that they've been working on trying to get at shortstop. I think one of them's named Durbin. I might be wrong on that. But, you know, got to give him an opportunity because that's what look at Ortiz, look at Turang, you know, give him an opportunity, and next thing you know, you're solid at the corners too.
The Brewers are in a situation where you're hurt almost either way. You've been doing so well. This team has been playing so good, and they've been doing it in spite of them not spending money. So as ownership looks at this, and if they're not concerned with winning a championship and they're just looking at finishing in the black, they've got everything they could ask for. They're winning in spite of that play, and look at how they're doing. So their argument is, well, why should we spend money? You know, our team's already doing well. As a fan, as I think sports people who are covering this team and all that, we're looking at it as you're a player or two away from maybe winning the World Series here. They have not shown us anything to not only earn the benefit of the doubt, but to show us that they care about that and that they are playing for that.
How are they going to ever possibly match the money that's being thrown out by the Dodgers, the Yankees, Houston, even now San Francisco? You know, they just can't. They just don't have the resources because they get penalized, right?
Yeah,
that's what it's not like. There's a cap. There is, but it's just a luxury tax, right? And so, big deal. We got bottomless pockets, you know, so we can just buy anybody we want. If we got to pay a tax, we pay a tax, but we get the best players. You don't have that in the NFL. That's the beauty of the NFL. I mean, it's a solid cap in your stock.
Right.
You know, I wish they would do that in more sports, but it's not about the equity. It's more about the people at the top winning.
You mentioned football, though, and I will stay. I as we go to break here, I'll maintain on one of my hotter takes. And to be fair to everybody, there's no way you can prove or disprove what I'm about to say. But I don't believe, under a shadow of a doubt, if you could put him on a lie detector test, if Jerry Jones took a lie detector test, I don't believe his biggest goal with the Cowboys is winning a Super Bowl.
Right?
I don't believe that. I don't believe it.
It's really head scratching, isn't it?
He wants that team to be worth more. He looks at that team as any other business. And he wants it to be the biggest, most expensive team in all of professional sports. And he's still trying to be bigger than soccer teams out in Europe. He's still trying to compete with that. That's his real goal. Not winning a Super Bowl. He's already done that. He doesn't care about the fans in that way. Any younger fans that never got to experience a Super Bowl, too bad as far as Jerry Jones is concerned. His concern, he'll tell everybody because he's smart at his job. He'll tell you it's about winning a championship. And how dare you? And I love this sport. And I'm a good old Southern boy. And all I care about is winning footballs. Get out of here, man. No. You spent time around a guy like that, you understand what really matters to him, and that's finishing in the black, like his oil. That's what really matters. And I worry about that with other franchises, like the Milwaukee Brewers or teams like that, where we don't know, because they're not as silly as Jerry Jones and doing a podcast every 5 seconds or can't wait to call up somebody after a loss and tell them how much he loves his team and how hard he's trying to win, and blah, blah, blah. We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back and wrap up the show. Thanks to our friends at Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods here at WFHR. I'd play it again. Why not? Welcome back to Playmakers here at WFHR, everybody. Randy and James hanging out with you. We're going to wrap up the show, take you to the top of the hour. Stick around. Got Pete Schwabe with Nightlight coming up. A great show that if you haven't checked out before, encourage you to.
You know, another one we should just real briefly mention, sorry, James, is the retirement of Coach Pat McDonald. Been doing for quite a number of years now, and every time we see each other, we always talk about the good times that we had way back in the early 2000s where we'd be making those trips. And it was really unique because it seemed like, for some unknown reason, it was like the last Saturday in February, right? And we'd be going over to Eau Claire or La Crosse for a state sectional semifinal or final. And it was just like a beautiful day like today, you know? And you're kind of in the middle of winter, and you're looking forward to spring, and it was just one of those gorgeous days. And some of those games, oh my gosh, overtime thrillers are right down to the wire. One of the state tournament games, six overtimes that Terry Steak broadcast, and I was fortunate enough to go there the next day and go into the semifinals. They were just exhausted after playing six overtimes. Some great teams, and he's going to be missed, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And every time I see him, we're going to reminisce about those old days too.
As we say goodbye to some of these coaches, it's more opportunity for us to appreciate their legacies and what they've done. We've had a couple of names recently that we've been talking about, and I think also gives us an opportunity to be encouraged and look forward to the next level, the next stage for not only those individuals and what they do, but also for the programs and what's going to happen there and what's going to go on with those. I know we'll be paying attention, and I appreciate the notes, Randy.
And it's kind of like when we talked about with Greg Gard, too. You don't know what goes in the locker room. You don't know what goes on at practices. You don't know the relationships that he has with the players. And for those people who have never coached, they think they know how to do it. But unless you've actually been there and you have that relationship with those kids and you're pouring your heart and soul into it, it's easy to say, well, we should get rid of this guy, but put yourself in their shoes and see how you would do.
Over the weekend, the previous weekend, Dick Vitale had a very heartfelt goodbye as he was doing his last broadcast. As we're talking about this, it just kind of leans right into the Dick Vitale conversation. I actually wanted to do this last week. We didn't get a chance to. Just wanted to congratulate him on an amazing career. He's not going to go away completely. He'll still be on SportsCenter here and there or whatever, but as far as doing live games and that, you won't be seeing Dickie V doing that anymore, and it's a shame. One of the characters of college basketball that we've come to love over the years, over the decades. Certainly, his different relationships have really been highlighted over time. I'm not going to get into a bio on Dick Vitale to everybody that already knows about the guy. But I do appreciate, and it does remind me again, it reminded me of losing Bill Walton and not hearing him call games anymore and how much I miss that.
He was so unique.
It's really easy to get caught up in nostalgia. I am excited, though, for the people that we still do get to hear.
Grant Hill's back with Raph, on those CBS games, and just not having Jim Nance there because he just wanted to go back to golf, right? But that threesome was always so much fun at tournament time, especially. But
I know for me, football-wise, I love Kevin Harlan, and we've got so many locals here in state that we get to hear that we know we love and so familiar with those voices. Seth and I were talking about it just last week about looking forward to that coming up and everything.
Brian Anderson, right? I mean, he's on these national games for the NCAA tournament, and he's our Brewer announcer, right?
Yeah, and of course, locally we've got Randy and Michael calling games, so we've still got that. You guys don't get to retire. It is in your contract, by the way. You cannot retire. I'm sorry if you had plans. You can't go anywhere.
No. Hey, that'd be a great way to go out, though, right? With that state championship.
Yeah. But that's a great point. That's a good point. I could. You know what? I couldn't say anything. I'd have to let you out on that one. A real quick note as we're leaving here, Randy. A quick story that came up, or a story that came up just right before we got on air, and I didn't get to dive too far into this. But young wide receiver, all pro for the Los Angeles Rams, Puka Nacua. Mm-hmm. He's 23 years old. And he said in an interview recently that he's hoping to his plan is to retire at the age of 30. It's kind of something we're seeing a little bit more in NFL players. Locally, Chris Borland, I think, is a note. Now, he didn't plan on retiring. He was forced to. But retiring early. This might be the next level of athletes kind of having this plan. Now, you want to make God laugh, make plans. Who knows what's going to happen? But I do find that interesting, the idea of mapping that out a bit more and saying, well, I know I'm going to take some trauma, but I'm not going to have a level there. so I could tell my family, look them in the eye and say, well, I get 8 years of this. Give me 8 years. Make all the money I can, get all the championships I can, whatever else, and then I'm done.
Like, which is especially interesting since I think the average length of an NFL player's career is 4 years.
Yeah.
So to plan out to 8 years, you know, you're hoping your health will hang on and you can accumulate as much wealth as possible, too.
It's kind of crazy when you think about that, too.
It really is.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting note. And I wanted to note that our Wisconsin Rapids Rafters are getting ready to sell single-game tickets. That'll be coming up on the 31st. Everybody, be sure to get your tickets and get ready for opening day coming up on May 31st.
We're only about 2 months away from that.
May 21st? Yeah.
Brewers,
we're right around the cusp of it.
The Brewers start this Thursday against the Yankees.
And the Brewers are right around the corner.
Spring has sprung.
We'll be talking baseball on Wednesday and talking plenty more, I'm sure. Taking a look at our sports schedule, we're it. Playmakers. I only get to say that like once or twice a year, where the only thing on the sports schedule for Pam and you guys is playmakers, and you guys worked hard enough. I'll take care of playmakers. A lot of people don't know this. Pam actually writes this whole show.
We're just reading script.
Yes, but you know what, Pam, you take a break. I'll go ahead and I'll just cover playmakers for the next couple of line. I mean, I told everybody I'm an actor. You guys know I'm just acting right now. No. We do want to say a big shout out to our sponsors, Family Natural Foods, Quality Plus Printing, giving us 3 hours every week to talk sports, to cover local sports with all of you. We greatly appreciate them doing that. Thanks so much to them for putting into our community and putting into our station here. We appreciate that.
And we'll stay local next Monday with Coach Jaglinski coming in and chatting a little bit about that wonderful last weekend.
Looking forward to that and looking forward to hanging out next week. Randy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Have a great night, everybody.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.